Blog Talk Radio.
My hope is built on nothing less than Jesus' blood and righteousness. I did not trust the sweetest frame, but wholly trust in Jesus' name. Christ the His face, I rest on His unchanging grace. In every high and stormy gale, my anchor holds within the veil.
Internet world, welcome to The Cross in the Desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble, and I'm so glad that you've taken out some time from your busy life to join me on the broadcast today. Have a very special, important program this morning. I'm going to be talking to a very good friend. She is a veteran radio producer and host in Canada, and I have been a guest on her show a couple of times talking about my book, Rahane, A Beautiful Fragrance. She's been so gracious to give me the opportunity to speak about Rahane. Her name is Narges Ghaffari. We have been Facebook friends, I think, about 5 years or so, and it is such a pleasure to know a veteran radio broadcaster in Canada like hers. She has the only Persian English radio show in Ottawa, and she's been on the air since 1995. That says an awful lot about her commitment as a human rights activist. And so it's going to be a wonderful time this morning. We're going to talk about Radio Arava, which is the name of her radio broadcasting company there in Ottawa. And we're going to be sharing a lot about what's happening with the Iranian regime and how they continue to oppress and destroy their people. We're going to talk about human rights and all kinds of other things that have to do with the Iranian regime. It is good to know that this administration has declared the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps a terrorist organization, and Canada is on the way to doing the very same thing. They need to be known as the state sponsor of terrorism all over the world. The oppression, the death, the destruction that they do bring, it is the Trump administration that has been the only one that has spoken out in such a powerful and concrete way. Of course, you know what happened under Obama. There was appeasement of the mullahs and billions of dollars of sanction relief money that was given to them And what they used it for was not their own people, not to bring betterment and hope to their own people, but they used it to enrich the tentacles of their terrorism all over the world. And so this morning, it's going to be a great privilege to talk to someone who is a veteran, someone who has been on the air going on, I guess, 24 years now, and has worked hard at her human rights to be a voice for the Iranians in Canada. I know several people that are human rights activists in Canada that are Iranian, and I'm thinking of Nazanin Afshin Jam, who is currently leading a worldwide campaign to make sure that Nazrin Satutah is released from prison. She has been in prison since June of 2018. And what is her crime? Nazrin spoke up for the women of Revolution Street who dared to remove their hijabs. Narges Kafari is my guest. She has been the host and producer of Radio Arava. IR is short for Iran. Ava means voice. The only Farsi-Persian English radio program in Ottawa since 1995. Narges has been a committed activist in women human rights fields for many, many years now. Radio Arava has been the target of Iranian regime's embassy before it was closed by Canada's conservative government in 2012. Although she's not a stranger to online verbal attacks and threats from supporters of the mullahs, there is a recent development of an important matter due to the deep crisis that the regime is in, and we're going to talk about that. I want to welcome to the Cross in the Desert my good friend and radio producer, Narges Kafari, and thank you so much for coming this morning, Narges.
Good morning, Randy. How are you doing?
It is a familiar voice. I thank you so much for taking time out of your busy life to be on the program today. I just spent a couple of minutes explaining to our radio audience the human rights activities that you do on Radio Arava, and you've been doing that for quite a few years. That is an amazing feat. Tell us a little bit about Radio Arava, the different kinds of programs that you feature, and the things that you talk about, and how this has been so effective for human rights for Iranians in Canada.
Radio Arava was established, as you said in the monogram, it was in January of 1995. There was no Persian radio show in Ottawa, so this one, Radio Arava, was the first one to be actually operated inside Ottawa. And at that time, we had the Iranian embassy in Ottawa, which was actually taking over the whole city. They had different activities. They were actually recruiting people at that time as well. And when we opened in 1995, there was a huge buzz about the Radio Arava. So some people thought we were from this organization. Some people thought we were supporter of the Iranian regime, and they are putting a woman's voice on the radio in order to trick people, which was obviously wasn't true. So there was a lot of buzz about that at that time. In 1999, the Iranian regime opened a cultural center in Ottawa. And through that, they were having activities such as celebrating Khomeini's life, which is the Iranian regime's founder, Islamic revolutionary founder. And they were actually celebrating the revolution itself, and they were bringing other people, and they were attracting Iranians who had escaped Iran. They were attracting these people to their ceremonies, to their celebration, and they weren't very strict about women having hijab or not. It wasn't a big deal for them. So it was an attraction for a lot of people. So Radio Arava and a few other people gathered together, and we actually were successful of shutting down this cultural center. First of all, in the mind of Iranian people who live in Ottawa, and showing them how this so-called cultural center is working. So this was one of our activities that we did, and it was successful. At the end, of course, the Iranian embassy was shut down by the Conservative Party and Mr. Harper, which are very, very, very grateful for to him for doing this, because it was very, very important to us. We had actually worked for years to shut down this espionage center because it was spying on dissidents. It was spying on the diaspora community in Ottawa and elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But because they had the embassy, they didn't have a lot of religion centers. In Toronto, in Montreal, in Vancouver, perhaps, they are working with the Iranian regime through religion centers, as I said, cultural centers. But in Ottawa, especially because there was the embassy, they couldn't spread their wings that much. So we in a way, we contained it with the help of the Iranian community. And Radio Irava, from the beginning, started with covering the news from Iran, the real news. I remember at that time, there was no satellite television. Obviously, there was no internet as we have today. So we had to get our news with very difficulty, of course, but we tried to get our news from reliable sources. And we tried to get the news from the protests in Iran. When you listen to other, when I listen to news from other sources, I couldn't understand why they wouldn't reflect the news of protests in Iran. They showed Iran as a country that has been actually a slave to this regime, which wasn't true. So this was one of our important points to get the news out of the protests, especially. And then we added the women's news, obviously, for the obvious reason, because I'm a woman, of course. And then the Iranian regime started attacking this radio. And a year after we opened the radio in 1996, they posed as the Iranian Association. We had an actual Iranian Association at that time in Ottawa. And they posed as these people to the radio station, to CHUO, which I'm very grateful for CHUO for supporting us throughout these years. So they said that we are from this organization and we don't like what's been said in that radio show and we wanted to be shut down. That's what they asked and that's what they demanded CHUO to do, which they obviously didn't do. The real Iranian Association came up and set things right. And then, as you said, throughout the years, I've been receiving verbal threats, you know, emails, profanity posts here and there. But this time, as you say, because the Iranian regime is much deeper crisis, it is important for your listeners to know how the Iranian regime works and operates and how they recruit people, actually. It's very important, and I think it's a delicate situation, and I'm very thankful to you, Randy, for letting me to talk about it.
This is very important, as you say, because we don't understand how they operate, but for us as human rights activists, we know that they spread their tentacles of terrorism all over the world. They go after refugees. They assassinate people they don't like. They have connections with Hezbollah and other terrorist organizations. And in your situation, because you are such a strong voice, being a voice for the Iranian people, because you're telling the news the way that it is, you're exposing them, they're going to attack you. You have a very serious situation that you're facing right now. Once again, the IRGC, we call them, the Iranian regime, are attacking you once again because of your powerful voice. And this is close to home. And as you mentioned, we need to understand how they operate. So if you could share with us exactly what their tactics are now, how they're trying to silence your voice.
Sure. So I'm going to tell you what exactly happened for the situation. Last Monday, April 22nd, one of my relatives who lives in Iran and had told me a few days prior that he had something very important to tell me. So he called me and conveyed the intelligence organization of the IRGC. IRGC stands for Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. And they had a message for me. They gave me four options, Randy, to choose from. And my choice would determine if anyone gets hurt or not. So this is very important. The first option is I stop all my activities against the Iranian regime in Canada. And this way, nothing is going to happen to me. That's what they told me. The second option is I return back to Iran, which I have to say to your listeners, I haven't gone back since I left Iran. So that is something that I would never do. The third option they gave me is continue my activism and stay in Canada, say no to them. And the last option is I stay in Canada, but cooperate with the IRGC intelligence organization. And this is the point. You see, myself, I had experience with other journalists around the world, Iranian or non-Iranian. These four options are for most of them, to attract people, to recruit them. So you see how the murderer of Iranian and Syrian people dare to threaten me who lives. My distance between Iran is 9,981 kilometers. Mm-hmm. So yeah. How dare they, you know, and they have given me a week or two to think about this. Of course, I don't have to think about it. And I gave my answer publicly on my Facebook page. My position has always been clear and transparent. Therefore, my choices are clear. And my choice is to topple the Iranian regime in its entirety. And to reach this goal, I will use all the tools available to me, Randy. I also told the IRGC through my Facebook page that these threats have no effects on me whatsoever. And the only thing that will intensify is my activism against the whole Iranian regime. The life of Iranian regime is virtually over, and they will soon be in front of justice, and I hope we have them answer to all these genocide and oppression, not even inside Iran. Randy, IRGC is a vast military organization that was established in Iran in the beginning of the 1979 revolution. Its objective and mandate, if you will, is to protect the Iranian regime. It is funny that I have to mention that there is no mention of Iran in IRGC. It stands for Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. It has nothing to do with Iranian national, you know. And IRGC has many branches. I'm sure your listeners are familiar with Quds Force. This is one of the branches of IRGC, which is right now in the terrorist list of U.S. and Canada. And IRGC was recently put on the list as well, which I'm grateful for Mr. Pompeo and Trump's administration. IRGC inside and outside of Iran suppresses people, but it also has taken over the economy for many years now. I'm sure your listener, maybe yourself, has heard about the flood in Iran, the recent flood that has affected 28 provinces of the 31 provinces that we have in Iran. And people are dealing desperately. They desperately need help, and Iranian regime just ignoring them or cannot manage them, you know. So this is the footprint of the IRGC is very, very clear. We can see it. IRGC has sold many lands around the dams and dams itself, and also sold lands which have been used for the water rain, to drain the water rain away from the cities, especially in Shiraz when I think about 200 people died, but the Iranian regime is claiming 77, but they were more than that. And these people were travelers who go every year to Shiraz, which has because it has a very good weather. It's very nice, and they go there to visit their family and visit the cities. But unfortunately, because the water path was removed from where it used to be, and the water just kept going inside the city and just took everything with him. So IRGC also is involved in terrorist activities outside of Iran. It has troops in Syria, in Yemen, and other countries, and they are very, very active outside of Iran, and now we hear that they are very active in the South America as well. Another organization, Randy, that Iranian regime has is the Ministry of Intelligence, MOI.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a terrorist organization as well. Not only suppresses and prison Iranians inside Iran, they have terrorist activities outside of Iran, and they are responsible for terroring the Shapur Bakhtiar, Fereydoon Farrukhzad, which was a singer and poet, and the most recent activities, the terrorist activities actually they had, was last June in Paris, and that they were trying to blow up the gathering of the Iranian resistance in that city, which was fortunately was stopped before made the damage. So this is the history of the Iranian regime. And the important thing that I say for your listeners that should know, as I said in the beginning, there are some journalists. I will give an example from Iran. So if one journalist comes out of Iran for, getting disturbed by the MOI or the IRGC, they leave Iran, they go to outside of Iran, and they don't leave them alone. They get their family, they pressure their family members to pressure those people who have fled to go back to stop their activity. And these four options is, I guess it's a standard options, and they give it to everybody who want to persuade them to stop their activities. So some people give in, unfortunately, Randy, and some mm-hmm. people don't.
You have been very courageous. They have threatened you. They have threatened your family. But you are a person that will not stand for those kinds of bullying tactics. You live in a free country. You're going to spend that time being a voice for the Iranian people. You're going to expose the corruption of this Islamic regime that has tortured, destroyed, and killed people for going on 40 years. And so they tried these tactics on you, and you said to them, no, there is no option for me other than I'm going to continue to be a strong voice. One of the things I like about your program, Nargis, is that you keep us informed of the history of the Islamic regime and what they did to 30,000 political prisoners back in 1988. Khomeini, in his last desperate moments of life, if you will, ordered the killing of 30,000 political prisoners. And Canada has stood up against this with you. They have a special day set aside to remember them. So you have been instrumental in keeping people informed about the deadly history of the IRGC and the Islamic regime, haven't you?
Of course, I have been involved in that department as well, but it's really the Iranian people, Iranian freedom-loving people in Ottawa, and my close friend Sharam Gulistane, who's been very, very active in that field for many, many years before Mr. Harper came to power even. But there's another event going on in Canada right now, Randy, and it's called Iran Accountability Week. This legislation was introduced to the Canadian Parliament in 2009 by Mr. Urban Kotler, who used to be a member of the parliament, but now he's not. But he's very active in the field of the human rights regarding Iran, and he is very, very active. So this legislation was, I'm going to read it to you, what Mr. Urban Kotler said. Urban Kotler, the Liberal Party's special counsel on human rights, as I said, he used to be the member of the parliament, he's not anymore, and international justice, introduced legislation that will hold Iran to account for its genocidal incitement, domestic repression, and nuclear armament. So every year there's a gathering in Canada that they look at the human rights situation, the nuclear situation, and the domestic repression, which is going on in Iran as we speak. I mean, it's not finished. It's not lowered. Nothing has been changed. It's the same, if it's not worse. So every year they gather and they invite some people to talk about what is going on in Iran and what should they do. And I like to, if people from Canada are listening to this program, I like to encourage my country, men and women, and Canadian people as a whole, to contact your member of the parliament in your area and ask them to blacklist IRGC. By doing this, first, you help the Iranian people, of course. And the second is we know that many relatives are IRGC members and their former members are living in Canada. Unfortunately, Canada has become a safe haven for them. They bring a lot of money,
yes,
and they can stay here. So I urge people to please to contact your member of the parliament and ask them, because Canada last year in June of 2018, the Canadian parliament actually passed a motion blacklisting IRGC as a terrorist entity. So, and the Prime Minister Trudeau was the first one to stand up and sign the paper. So this gives us another important tool to go forward and blacklist IRGC. And also because the U.S. has put them on their list, Canada should follow suit. I mean, it's a human rights situation, and Canada stands for human rights. So we must do what we can to blacklist IRGC as soon as possible.
Yes, it is very important. And what we have seen here with the Trump administration, calling them the terrorist organization and taking a stand, mm-hmm. I'm very grateful for my president, and I know that he would work with your prime minister as well, in standing up against this Islamic regime. He did what the Obama administration failed to do. He stopped the nuclear deal. He called it the worst deal in the world. He stopped the flow of money to the mullahs. And cutting off their supplies is very important. And blacklisting them is another step in the right direction. Narges, this has been now 40 years since the Iranian regime, and you think they're on their way to death. You think that they are crumbling, and very soon, mm-hmm. there could be democracy and freedom in Iran. Is that your feeling as well?
It's absolutely my feeling, Randy. And look at the proof. The Iranian regime in Iran are facing protests every single day from people. I mean, there's no way they can last more than 40 years that they have. Outside the country, look at their nuclear activities. What happened? Everything is stopped. Look at their political relations with other countries. Every country that used to be friends with the Iranian regime, they're going away. They're distancing themselves from them. And, of course, the sanctions, it's working very well against the Iranian regime. And I hope they can pressure more the Iranian regime. And, you know, Zarif's trip, Zarif is in U.S. right now, and he is on a, I call it begging trip. He's going to beg for negotiation with President Trump. And I heard the reaction from the State Department. They tweeted yesterday, and I'm going to read this tweet for you, Randy. It says, it's not surprising that Zarif, the self-proclaimed human rights professor, who is the mouthpiece of the Iran's violent regime, comes to U.S. to enjoy the freedoms he denies the Iranian people. What is surprising is some people still give this hypocrite the light of day. So you see the receiving of Zarif is very different in U.S. right now. Even 2 years ago, it wasn't the same. 3 years ago, it wasn't the same. So they are in a big hole that they cannot get out. And I hope that President Trump stays on course, stays on this path that is for the Iranian people. It's helping Iranian people. Pressure the Iranian people. The oil embargo, the oil sanction is working, and Iranian regime is desperate to sell its oil. And of course, the support, the moral support of President Trump for Iranian people is tremendous. And I hope that one day we can receive President Trump and American people in general to a free Iran and celebrate the freedom of Iran together.
Yes, and in fact,
Randy, when you said that President Obama couldn't do it, I think, I don't want to be disrespectful to President Obama, but I think he could do something. He chose not to do it. He had a lot
That's
of opportunities
true.
To do that, but he
yes.
tried. He decided not to do, especially in Syria. We remember his red lines. He didn't do anything. He just stayed inactive.
Yes, and it was during the 2009 presidential election that the protests were asking the question, President Obama, are you with us or with the mullahs? And you're right,
exactly.
He did not respond. I wanted to just end our little talk together with a tweet from President Trump back in January of 2018 during the uprisings. He said, "Such respect for the people of Iran as they try to take back their corrupt government. You will see great support from the United States at the appropriate time." So he is a voice like you for the Iranian people, and the Iranian people in a majority are responding in a positive way. And you've outlined for us today in our talk the dangers of the IRGC, the dangers to yourself, the dangers to your family, but you've also showed us they're crumbling, that this regime is in a death spiral. And so one day very soon there will be democracy. What I want you to end with, Narges, is let us know how we can connect with your program through social media so we can hear these interviews and hear the news that's true in Iran.
Yeah, of course, it would be my pleasure. They can go to my website at www.radioirava.com. My Facebook page is under my name, Narges Ghaffari. It's the same for my Twitter feed. And most of my interviews, Randy, is in Farsi or Persian, but I do have English interviews as well, which is on the website itself. They can follow the website and listen to it. And I hope that I have been able to make it a difference for even one person. And thank you so much, Randy, giving me the time to talk about this.
Oh, it's my pleasure. You've made a big difference in my life. You've been a tremendous voice, a tremendous support of what I do. But most importantly, you are a very strong, courageous lady. My thoughts and prayers to you and your family that you continue to be that strong voice, Narges, and look forward to you coming back and sharing your success with Radio Arava on my broadcast one day.
Thank you. Well, I hope one day I can come on and tell you that Iran is free. I can't wait for that day.
That's going to be the celebration of our lives. Thank you much, Narges Ghaffari, producer
thank
of Radio Varaba, and thank you for calling from Canada.
Thank you so much. Have a great day, everyone. Thank you, Randy.
Okay. Goodbye.
Bye.
A tremendous, tremendous voice, a tremendous human being, and she really loves humanity in all that she does. She is a very strong voice for human rights and freedom. Have such respect for her. And please keep her in your thoughts and prayers. The threats against her are real. The threats against her family are real. She's taken a stand. She's being very courageous. So please keep Narges and what she's doing in your thoughts and prayers. I'm going to come back in about 5 minutes. I want to talk to you about a book I wrote about 7 years ago. It's about the heart's longing for meaning and purpose in life. And I want you to hear a beautiful song, which is going to set up our talk about Driven by the Wind. This is Christopher Cross.
caught up in the red screen. Every word in the symphony, don't you believe me? Sailing, take me away to where I'm always good at sea. Dream of the wind to carry me. Soon I will be free.
What a beautiful song that paints so well with words. You can picture lying across the deck of a sailboat in the middle of the Pacific Ocean at sunset at the equator. Well, that's what this book is all about. I'm holding in my hand a book I wrote about 7 years ago called Driven by the Wind, The Calling of Tara. There's a picture on front of the lead character, Tara, red-haired, holding her hands together, standing and gazing at the ocean. Tara had a mystical connection with the ocean, but she also had a deep, deep longing in her heart. She was looking for meaning and purpose in life, and she felt that the answers to every problem were out there on the ocean. And this book is an adventure about the longing that human beings have. And a lot of what I wrote about in this book comes from the great apologist and Christian author C.S. Lewis. I want to read to you the preface to this book. The great apologist and Oxford teacher C.S. Lewis describes in his books that inward thirst that all human beings have for something better in life. He calls it a longing. In his classic book, Until We Have Faces, Lewis writes, "The sweetest thing in all my life has been the longing to reach the mountain, to find the place where all the beauty comes from." Well, he's on to something, isn't he? Human beings are on a spiritual quest to find satisfaction, an inward longing to discover that something that will bring fulfillment and meaning to their lives. Lewis proclaims, quote, that if I discover within myself a desire which no experience in this world can satisfy, the most probable explanation is that I was made for another world. Driven by the Wind, The Calling of Tara is a book about this quest. Tara is drawn to the ocean. She has an inner urge of belonging to the high seas. Nothing else will satisfy her. She has a longing that on the ocean, her world of the wind and waves, that somewhere out there are the answers that she is looking for. In her brokenness and pain, Tara embarks on a solo circumnavigation of the world in her little sailboat called the Mistral Wind. However, this book I wrote is much more than just an adventure on the high seas. It's a journey, a spiritual journey, an inward journey that all of us have taken at one time or another. Whether in a sailboat or a car or climbing up a mountain, we have at one time answered this inward call to discover our purpose in life, to get the answers to our suffering and pain and misery. So my question to you is this morning. Do you have a longing, a tugging at your heart? Well, then if you do, come along with me on this journey of inward discovery with Tara. Tara got in her sailboat to answer the inward longing, and the God of irresistible love pursued her all over the world in her tiny little sailboat. I want to take just a moment to set this book up because I'm going to be talking about this book, Driven by the Wind, and this quest for meaning and purpose. Tara's father introduced her to sailing as a child. And it was at one time in the bathtub that she had this tiny little plastic sailboat that she would push across the water of the bathtub and watch it sail. And she was fascinated by this little tiny sailboat. Well, as she got older, her father built her a more beautiful sailboat, is handcrafted. And she went out on the pond and would push that sailboat and watch the winds fill those tiny little sails. And she loved that freedom. And then when she was about 9 or 10 years old, growing towards teenage years, her father took her out on his sailboat and then let her navigate that boat. And when she got her hands on the tiller, her life was never the same. Her father introduced her to the world of the wind and waves. Growing up, she had a very strong relationship with her brother, Nathan. They would go out to this lighthouse and they would play hide and seek. This lighthouse was no longer really active. It was kind of closed down, but it wasn't completely closed down to the point that you couldn't climb up the stairs, see? And they would play games with hiding in the dark of night at the old lighthouse on the cliff overlooking the Pacific Ocean. Well, one day her brother Nathan announced, "I am going to circumnavigate the globe." Well, of course, he had the skills. He had been raised in a family of sailors, and Nathan got out on his sailboat with all the most latest sophisticated equipment, satellite phone, everything that he needed, navigation, radar, everything that would make his voyage successful. And then one night, about 9 months into his voyage, out over the dark and difficult and dangerous Indian Ocean, his father received a satellite call from the Coast Guard. There had been a distress signal received from Nathan. They were going out to search for him. Nathan was never found again. My book opens up with this crisis in Tara's life. She goes out one day on the beach in the early morning, which is characteristic of her, and she stands with her ankles in the water with the foam of the ocean, you know, rising up to her ankles, and she thinks she sees Nathan's sailboat, and she becomes just livid, excited. And then she realized that it was just an illusion, a trick on the eyes at sunrise, and so she's broken inside. But Tara is an independent, free-spirited girl, and she will not stand by without coming to a conclusion about what happened to my brother. I've got to find out. So she refits an open 40 race boat, has her best friends to install all the latest equipment, and she has decided to go out there and find where Nathan disappeared and get answers to what happened to him. But yet, there's just one little problem. Her mother is livid. How could you go out there? How can you do this? We lost our brother. I lost my son, and now I could lose you. But Tara says, "But Mom, I have to do this. I have a calling. I have a longing to go out there." And so the scene in the book I want to read to you is after they have refitted this old boat and they have done all the work necessary for her voyage. Tara has a talk with some of her best friends. And one of her friends is a pastor. Now, she's not a Christian. Her father was a Christian, but she just did not feel as though that was her calling. And so she's talking to this pastor right before her voyage to find out what happened to Nathan. She says to the pastor, "I remember going to church with Dad," Tara said, bowing her head in despair. "I just never felt like I belonged. I felt trapped. It was so different, such a different feeling than the feeling of freedom that I feel out on the ocean." Pastor Jeffries listened intently to Tara and then gently put his hand on her shoulder. "But Tara, the feeling you had out on the ocean, the feeling of freedom, God is a God of delight and pleasure. God created the wind and the waves for you to enjoy. That feeling of freedom and joy is something God wanted you to experience. When you sat in church, you weren't trapped. It's just a building, Tara." Tara listened carefully to Pastor Jeffries. She respected his opinions and insights. "I understand that you don't believe like your father did, Tara, but what I'm trying to say is believing in God doesn't limit or quench your freedom. Christianity is not bondage, Tara." Tara kept her eyes fastened on Pastor Jeffries, one of the wisest Christians that ever lived. Saint Augustine once said while praying to God, quote, "Our hearts are restless until they find their rest in you." Tara was quiet, reflecting on what Pastor Jeffries had just shared with her. "I'm not trying to be disrespectful, Pastor Jeffries. You are a wonderful friend and a wonderful man that my father loved and respected, but I'm just sorry. That is not my pathway." This is what Tara consistently says. Even though Pastor Jeffries, what he said was so true, the God that you are opposed to, that you don't feel freedom with, he's the one that created the wind and the waves. He's the one that blows the mistral wind every day. The freedom that you feel out there comes as a gift from the God of delight and pleasure. He is not a God that holds you in bondage. Christianity is not a religion, Tara. It is a love relationship. And yet, right before Tara goes out on the ocean, she sits at the ocean side and tries to connect with what Pastor Jeffries has said. She is finished with refitting Mistral Wind. She's out on the shoreline. That rhythmic sound of the wave kissing the shore, Tara feels this utter oneness with the ocean. And tonight she felt that call again. It was that tiny whisper tugging softly at her heart. Tara raised her arms up into the cool air and surrendered to the call of the ocean. But after a few moments, she let her arms drop back down by her side. A strange, empty feeling suddenly rushed through her heart and mind. The tranquil, relaxing atmosphere Tara had been experiencing would suddenly change into a mood of darkness and despair. Tara opened her eyes. "What's wrong?" she mumbled out loud to herself. "It's been an incredible day. I'm preparing for the adventure of a lifetime. I have a new sailboat that's been refitted. Why? Why should I feel so depressed and empty?" Isn't that a very important question? Tara really, in her own mind, has everything that she wants. She has a brand new sailboat. She's going out to find out what happened to her brother. And she is free. She's sitting right there at the ocean where she has this great connection to, this emotional, mystical connection. And yet, in spite of all of these accomplishments, she feels empty inside. Right at the beginning of my book, I quoted from my song that I wrote about the calling, and I want you to hear the words because I think that it says everything. "I feel so dry and empty inside. There is no rest from the tears I cry. I'm broken and bruised, and I feel I've died, but I have a real thirst that won't be denied. It's the longing." Tara is out on the ocean now, on her around-the-world voyage on Mistral Wind. Her best friend Scott at work has given her a Bible. Even though she knows she's not a believer, he's giving her that in those long moments when there is no wind. She can take time to read. He never pressured her. He just gave it to her on the day she left on her journey. And so Tara decides, okay, you know, there's no wind today. It's really excruciating out on the ocean when there is no wind and you're just in this lull and you're not moving very fast at all, hardly moving, in fact. And so Tara opens up this Bible and she just turns to one of the Psalms. And she turns to Psalm 139. She remembers this because her dad used to read the Psalms to her as a child. Psalm 139 says, O Lord, you have examined my heart and know everything about me. You know when I sit down or stand up. You know my thoughts even when I'm far away. Well, Tara stopped reading and reflected on what the psalm was claiming. And then she said this, I don't feel very comfortable about someone knowing everything about me, she protested. That makes me feel violated and vulnerable. But she goes back and begins reading from the psalm. You know what I'm going to say even before I say it, Lord. I can never escape from your spirit. I can never get away from your presence. If I go up to the heavens, you are there. If I go down to the grave, you are there. If I dwell by the farthest ocean, even there your hand will guide me. Well, Tara closes the Bible and sighs in frustration. You know everything? She whispers in a sarcastic tone. You know my thoughts before I think them? Well, even though in her protest about this God who knows everything about her, and she doesn't feel comfortable with that, she's still drawn to the words. They speak intimately to her heart, but she still has this anger and confusion. She leans her head back. She gazes up into the night sky. If you know everything, God, then why don't you tell me what happened to Nathan? Why do you let me sit here and go through this pain and agony? Tara leaned forward. The majesty and magic of the calm, relaxing night had suddenly vanished. Tara's quiet, reflective mood had been transformed into a mood of question asking and despair. Tara's world of the wind and waves had been rudely interrupted by a few verses from the Bible. This is why, God, I am who I am, a free spirit, Tara said in a complaining tone. Tara took a quick gulp of water and leaned her head back again. I don't like anyone to know everything about me, God. I feel much safe and secure in my own world. Tara's out in her sailboat. She's reflecting on what Psalm 139 says. She doesn't like the fact that this God of irresistible love is pursuing her in her little sailboat all over the world. And she feels violated because this God knows everything about her. You see, but here's the problem. Tara has a deep longing and emptiness that ultimately is not even fulfilled by her sailing. She knows she's missing something in her life. She remembers the words of Pastor Jeffries. Our hearts are restless until they find our rest in thee. I'm not going to tell you what happens. I want you to get this book on Amazon.com, Driven by the Wind, The Calling of Tara, because if I tell you everything in the book, it's going to spoil the great ending. There's a lot that's going to happen in this book, but I'm reading it to make a point. The God of irresistible love wants to come and satisfy your heart like he wanted to come and satisfy the heart of Tara. And you're running. You're looking for truth in all the wrong places. You're trying to find fulfillment in everything from bank accounts, careers, relationships. You're looking for that magical connection, that fulfillment, but you're not finding it in material things. And God is calling to you, like he was calling to Tara. Don't resist him. Don't keep running. because he has a nasty habit of continuing to pursue you with his irresistible love. You might be empty inside like Tara, and you want to know what fulfills me. Jesus said long ago, I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me will never hunger again, and whoever believes in me will never go away thirsty. Jesus claims to be that fulfillment that you're looking for. And I'm not talking about a great religious leader, a great prophet. I'm talking about God himself, who left his royal throne in heaven and took on human flesh to come down to our planet to identify with us, to take all of our sins, our guilts, our helplessness, our hurts, our pains, to die on a cross and rise again and to give us new life. That's who our God is. He's that God of irresistible love. He's that God that can satisfy the deepest longings in our hearts. You may have arrived at life and done everything that you've ever done. You may have this bucket list. You've done it all, but you're empty inside. Jesus says, come to me, you who are weary and carry heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. Jesus comes by invitation. He doesn't come by conquering with the sword. He comes conquering instead with his irresistible love. I just reach out to you today through my book and through my program, and I hope and pray that you will find your satisfaction and your fulfillment when you cry out to Jesus. He hasn't disappointed billions of people. Billions of people trust in him today. They have found their hope and freedom in him, just like I have. And I hope that you too will give him an opportunity to reveal himself to you. And when you do, you'll never be the same. He is the answer to your longing. He is the answer to your emptiness. He is the forgiveness that the human race so desperately needs, the forgiveness and the love that all of us at one time who have been desperately looking for have found in Jesus. It is that love relationship that makes all the difference in the world. I want to once again thank my wonderful, wonderful guest, Narja Skafari from Radio Arava, for really educating us on the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps and what they are doing to Iranians and people all over the world. And I pray that her situation, that her family is taken care of and protected. And I pray for Narges to have safety and peace and to continue being such a strong voice for the Iranian people. I want to thank you today for listening. God bless you. I will see you next Monday on The Cross in the Desert.
My hope is built on nothing less than Jesus' blood and righteousness. I did not trust the sweetest frame, but wholly trust in Jesus' name. Christ the love.
Lord.